Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is South Africa's former minister, Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi, from the African Development Bank, its special envoy on gender. She previously held the position of director of the United Nations Development Programme's work in 197 countries and territories around the globe. She was also appointed by the Secretary General of the United Nations as a board member of the United Nations Institute for Training and Research. Prior to joining the United Nations, she served as Minister for Public Service and Administration in South Africa and as Minister for Welfare and Population Development in South Africa. She also served as the National Deputy Elections Coordinator for the African National Congress from 1993-1994 in the lead-up to South Africa's first democratic elections of April 1994. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, and it's good to be on the show again.
Today's focus is about the 2014 report made by the African Development Bank called Women Board Directors of Africa's Top Listed Companies. And I have many questions that I'd like to ask, but before we commence, can you please give us an outline of the main objectives for the research?
Yeah, we commissioned this research in 2013-2014, and the main purpose was to look at the number of women who serve on boards of Africa's listed companies. There's not been such a piece of research done before on the African continent, and we thought there was a need to get a conversation going. How do we ensure that economies are inclusive? How do we ensure that we do have diverse boards on the continent? How do we ensure that how do we ensure that there is a broader talent pool to draw board members from? And we thought we could only do so if we have some baseline data. And as a result, this study was done of the 12 largest African economies. We looked at about 307 companies, and these companies were categorized according to large, mid-cap, and small companies. I should also emphasize that the 12 African economies that we looked at, we also looked at those with stock exchanges. So when you read the report, you'll see that there's nothing on Central Africa. And this is due to the fact that the data used was data that was drawn on from December 2013, and Central Africa has one stock exchange that covers five economies, but there was only one listed company at that point in time. So it was to get a discussion going, and I'm pleased to say that has started.
And obviously we need that baseline where we're looking at the data and it's at level points. What I find so pertinent about the study is that lately Africa's accelerating economic growth seems to be written about in nearly every magazine, any piece of editorial, and we have statements like the explosive economic growth which moves us beyond commodities, oil, minerals, and domestic consumption and regional trade. But in spite of all of this, women who account for over half of Africa's growing population, their contribution to the region's economy is extensive, but they still represent the majority of the poor. And according to the report, it said that largely it's because A, they make up 70% of the informal sector, B, their work is unstable, poorly paid, and almost invisible. And according to the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, African food chains exist because of women who produce 70% of the crops. They tend to 50% of the livestock and market 60% of the food. I was wondering if you would be able to help expand on almost this contradicting issue where we have these accelerated economic growth, but yet we have continuous poverty almost represented by women's groups, and what we can do to help rectify it.
You know, part of this goes back to the point I made earlier. How do we ensure that inclusive growth is inclusive? I think in addition to what you've just raised, many people may recollect that McKinsey has just recently come out with a report that looks at the whole issue of women contributing towards economic growth. And I think they have figures such...
Is this the one with the lean in combination with McKinsey and I think with Sheryl Sandberg's
Sandberg, I think, well, it's the most recent study. And I think it's the one that looks at what's it about $12 trillion being contributed towards the GDP of countries and saying that very clearly a greater involvement of women will change GDPs across the continent. Going back to what you reflected upon as the contradiction of women being largely in poverty and affected by that, I think we shouldn't be completely surprised, though, because, again, let's look at agriculture, and you spoke about agriculture and food security. We know that women are responsible for food security, but it's essentially in small plots. And hence, we've also looked at a value chain study, looked at equitable value chain across agriculture, and we looked at four sectors, coffee, cocoa, cassava, and cotton. And the purpose for doing this was to look at the sector that is considered the largest employer of women, or the sector where the largest number of women are employed, if I can put it that way. Again, when we look at the employment of women, they are really on the smallholder farms. We don't see them present throughout the value chain, and we don't see them in the value chain from farm to market. And there is a need to have a concerted effort to turn this around. As the ADB, we also have the first gender equality index that looks at women as producers, it looks at women and human development, and then women as leaders and decision makers. And when you look at the human development of women, interestingly, North Africa and Algeria, when it looks at the economic levels of women, they are leading. And yet, when you look at the very Algerian women and their role in the economy, they're lagging. So we've got to do something about education, but we mustn't make the assumption that that's the only thing that will make a difference. So let's fast forward and talk about this growth story of Africa, and you've spoken about the way in which it's been reflected upon. Some have called it the Lions on the March and so on. The very Lions on the March seem to leave the lionesses out. And if we want sustainable growth, there's sufficient evidence that points to the fact that you've got to ensure that you draw on 100% of your talent pool. You clearly need to invest on increasing that pool and expanding it, but let's draw on what's there. So let's come back to women on boards. Again, when we look at the numbers on women serving on boards of listed companies, these numbers are low, and it's largely due to the fact that there's not a consistent regulatory environment across the continent. Not all private sector companies have mandates on women serving on boards. There's also not the same levels of accountability to stock exchanges. At this point in time, I think out of the 12, there are only about two or three stock exchanges that really does public reporting on who serves on the boards and does a disaggregation of that.
So would you be part of what you're doing, look at almost applying a form of governance structure that goes across stock exchanges throughout the continent so that we are comparing apples with apples and not apples with oranges, as it were?
Absolutely, but that's why we've categorized it, as I said earlier, you know, where you have small cap companies, middle cap, and large. And this, of course, is between $500,000 up to about $1 billion. So we've done the different categorizations, but we'd also want to see exactly what the situation is, because small cap companies from $150 million to $500 million, a mid cap cap is between 500 million and 1 billion US dollars, and then large cap companies over 1 billion US dollars. So we're looking at exactly which companies fit into which categories. We also know that there's a difference between public sector and private sector companies, because with public sector companies, it's more possible to put quotas in place. And we've seen this in South Africa, and we've seen it in abroad, like Norway. They're doing quite well, but it's because public listed companies had clearly looked at a focus around quotas. We've seen that for Germany. We've seen it elsewhere.
And I believe France is also looking at an initiative to be more inclusive. And
oh, yes, France is, definitely. And very quickly, before this gets lost, it should be stated that as a whole, Africa is doing well. And the reason I'm saying it's doing well is the European Union has 18% of women on boards. The US 14 500 is at 16.9%. And these are the figures for 2013-2014. In Africa, we have 12.7% of all cap companies. So that's the average for large, medium, and small cap companies. If we go to large cap companies, we're at 14.4%. So if we look at that, we're doing well as Africa, and we're leading the emerging markets. But what's telling is that globally, it's not a good story. And if we go back to a study that was done by Credit Suisse 2 years, well, 1 year or nearly 2 years ago, they actually pointed out, and this was based on 6 years of research, that companies that have more diverse boards tend to perform better in terms of their bottom line. So we're not raising this simply from a normative perspective, and we're not saying it that because our constitution talks about the equality of persons, men and women, this should be done. We're also saying it makes a good business case. And this is what we're looking towards. I want to link it back to your opening comment where you said women are those that are most affected by poverty.
I'd like to also touch back when you were talking about increasing the percentage of women on boards. And as you said, that it doesn't just add to the diversity, but it also contributes beneficially to the bottom line. And part of that, I think, has to do with the way that women deal with certain scenarios and men deal with certain scenarios.
Absolutely.
So they bring different aspects which are, in effect, complementary, and ultimately that combination helps to increase the profitability by looking at different aspects within the business space.
You're absolutely right. I mean, let me give one example, and I've used this quite often. When you come to the issue of equity, it's quite known that men are greater risk takers than women are. I mean, we want to be sure that there will be returns on investment. We want to ensure that we don't lose money unnecessarily. So in those instances, you almost want to bring men and women together because you want to have the risk-taking, but you also want someone to check the numbers and really investigate that money is well invested. Because at the end of the day, you and I don't want to lose our pension money because there's been a risky investment. Of course, if there's a high return, we always say high risk, high return, then that's better. But you'd want to ensure that everything has been checked.
You know, and it harkens back to the financial crisis of 2008.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, let's look at who's on Wall Street. Let's look at who were behind the decision making. And at the end of the day, there were very few women that were in the boardrooms at the time, and even in decision making. I'd want to take that further and also say there's certain sectors that you see, you know, a sort of affinity for having greater involvement of women. Let's look, for example, at Woolworths. I mean, Woolworths has been identified as one of those companies that are doing better in terms of women's participation. But interestingly, since 2013, you've seen Absa Africa or Barclays Africa really change and transform things tremendously. And let's ask ourselves the question, who's at the head? So when you look at Upside Africa, the chairperson is Wendy Lucas-Bull, and when you look at the CEO, it's Maria Ramos, and they've made it very clear. We want to ensure that there are diverse boards. And I just want to digress quickly. When you look at the title of this report, it says, "Where are the women?" Because in many instances, chairpersons of boards will say, "Oh, we can't find the women." But the issue is that even when they do find the women, they don't know what to do with us. And they don't include us, because at the end of the day, we're saying, use the best talent pool available, men and women. So don't go out there with half of the pool. And let's just take this analogy to sport. You're not going to play either a rugby game match or a football game with half of your team. You're not going to take 8 players instead of the full number of 11 in football or soccer. So why do you want to do it when it comes to the economy? Why do we want public and private sector companies to operate with half of a potential workforce? And whilst we're at it, let's build the rest of the workforce, because changing and sustained inclusive economies are those that really build the human capital in countries. We'd also want to build innovation, so we've got to invest in the human capital going forward.
Absolutely. And one of the points that we raised earlier was about the elements of quotas. And I know that there's been many studies in different countries by academics, by women's group, and various consulting firms, which have clearly shown this correlation of having more women in senior corporate leadership positions for financial performance. And one of the examples was with the former governor of Nigeria's central bank, who led the effort of targeting 30% of board seats in Nigerian financial institutions. And it almost, well, for me, it seems self-evident that while Africa is at an early stage of economic growth, that countries should work towards this greater inclusion of women as paid workers and leaders. And as someone who has sat in several ministerial chairs, do you think that something as fundamental as gender equality is possible in our lifetime?
It will be. The Sustainable Development Goals have just been adopted at the UN General Assembly in September. And the 17 SDGs has cutting across them the whole, the issue of gender equality. There is, of course, Sustainable Development Goal number 5 that specifically looks at gender equality. And the target set there was to work towards equality by 2030. And that's around the corner, if you think about it, 15 years away. And I think we all need to work backwards, counting from 2030. I'd actually want to put out a challenge to South Africa and say, as South Africans, with as far-reaching a constitution as we have, with the founding provisions committed to building an equal, non-racial society that has equality irrespective of gender, race, sexual orientation and all that, with the kind of Bill of Rights we have. This is doable, but we must just be ready to invest appropriately. We've also, as a country, made it quite clear that we won't shy away from quotas. And there's nothing wrong with quotas. At the end of the day, if you want to redress inequalities, you look at how you will level the playing field. I think the whole issue is for everyone to understand inclusion, not as shrinking and sharing a smaller pie, but actually growing the pie. And it will allow everyone to have space to take things forward.
And I think that's the right mindset, because so often it is, well, this is what we have and there's only this amount to go around, and if someone is taking this piece of the pie, then it means there's none left for me. But exactly as you said, it's about growing it so that there's actually more for all to benefit from.
But this is what inclusive growth is about. So bring the complete team, put your A team around the table, and let the A team invest into economic growth so that we expand the pie. Because at the end of the day, if we don't have expanding pie, we are going to be hard hit by the ramifications of inequalities in society. And we'd want to ensure that we're able to use our young people, men and women, in building our economy. So it's them working in the public and private sector. So I think it's the challenge that I want to throw out there is, let's see how we can expand this pie, how we can make it much bigger. And maybe it won't be a pie at the end. It will be something much broader.
A buffet. You
know? It's a buffet indeed, yes.
And we spoke briefly about the different sizes of the industries and the sectors that the report addressed. And where we had, specifically in the report, I read a comparison of large cap companies, which are over $1 billion worth, had the highest percentage of women on their boards. And although women's representation ranged from 25% to 45%, I couldn't help but wonder from an interview that I had last week with the Polish ambassador to South Africa, and she said that sometimes, she says, there is a almost misfortune where women who get to the top and have achieved their target, that there is a tendency to forget who they are, who they represent, where they came from, and in effect almost seeing their appointment as a personal achievement. What's your point of view on that?
You know, I think you will have that challenge because when you fight to get into a particular space, it's very easy to get affected by a minority syndrome that you fight to retain that space and you don't always take into account a larger agenda that must be taken forward. But I think that there's also been many movements in recent times. You alluded to the McKinsey's Sheryl Sandberg lean in approach, and you've heard through the whole lean in movement that Sheryl Sandberg has started, where there's clearly a view that, look, we've got to crowd in more women. This is not just for the individual, it's also looking at broader societal change. This particular report also talks about the role of civil society. And civil society also takes into account the larger women's movements and otherwise. How do we ensure that we get women to also, in the roles they occupy, become mentors for other women, become mentors to younger women? And again, we mustn't be static in how we see mentorship. I've been in a fortunate situation where, and look, I've got to put a disclaimer and say, having spanned different careers over a number of decades, I've had been able to interact with women at different levels of their careers and all. But there's been a number of women out there who've been willing to provide support to others. There's also been women who've been ready to demand. And I'd want to say to the younger women and the women who are still trying to find their niche, call on us who have, who are occupying positions, whether it's in the larger economy, in companies, whether it's in the public sector, private sector, in politics. Press our number and say, look, you have a responsibility. Don't make an assumption that when I'm preoccupied with a particular challenge, that I'm always going to remember what needs to be done, because I may just be pushing particular targets. Remind me that I have a larger obligation. And we should also bear in mind that we shouldn't just demand this from women. We should demand it from men as well, because it's not just women alone who will change the scenario. It's women and men. So I'd also want to challenge progressive men to play a role and show that they can be feminists as well.
I think that you are absolutely right. Today we're talking to Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moliketi from African Development Bank, who is the Special Envoy on Gender.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You're listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. Today we're talking to Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moliketi, African Development Bank Special Envoy on Gender. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. And in our previous conversation today, we are talking about a report the African Development Bank did specifically on women on boards. Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moliketi put the challenge out to South Africa to, before 2030 deadline, to have greater equity and equality within the board framework.
Goes for the rest of Africa as well.
And she said, expanding to the rest of Africa. And a further call, when we were looking at women who are in specific roles of prominence, where mm-hmm. we have our younger generations calling upon those individuals who occupy those prominent positions, that they have a responsibility to help to ensure that we have the sustainability effects so that they, in turn, can get to their rightful position in a point of development. Now, when I read the research roundup section in the report, it stated that one clear way to boost membership of women on boards is simply to count how many women that we currently have serving, which obviously provides the baseline data, and it gives a country a starting point in order to measure progress. And the release of this information is also a vehicle to inform the public through media coverage of the findings, such as today, which can spur companies as well as government agencies to pay greater attention to gender and the board composition. Now, as somebody who has fought so long and hard for our democracy over several decades, who has seen it achieved and has sat on the government table, do you think that perhaps women should start to turn the fight around by almost taking advantage of our greater numbers, being that we're about 52% of the population, and use that in the voting pool to in turn elect more women so that they have a representation of women's interest groups to occupy more positions of power, and at the same time also using consumer power as women to change companies' policies?
It's an idea. Let me start with women using their voting power when it comes to elections and all. This goes to two things, and it goes to intra-party democracy, because political parties, at the end of the day, determines the composition of the list systems. And South Africa, for example, has a particular electoral system that it follows, and we have that differing in different countries on the continent. And I'd also put out a challenge along the same vein. So I firstly said intra-party democracy. That must change, and it must reflect the need for greater equality as it looks at the Lister system. The second issue is ensuring that women candidates have quite a strong platform that they stand on, that they present, that will look at the mandate that they articulate. Because at the end of the day, we've got to have resonance with the larger constituency out there to turn things around. So it's possible. And women can do that, but I think we'd all want our vote to be used and utilized in a manner where we see the best outcome possible. I'd want inclusive growth. I'd want to ensure the sustainable development. I'd want job creation. I'd want to ensure that there are more girls in school. I'd want to see the quality of education improve, and that girls and boys will qualify and they will contribute towards a vibrant economy, greater innovation in the economy, and so on. So that's the one side. The second side that you raised was, okay, can we use our consumer power and withhold this from those companies that fall in listed companies and so on. Yes, we can do that, but you know, it's a bit more complex because when you have campaigns are issue-based that every man and woman or every woman can relate to, irrespective of where she's located in society. So not every rural woman or urban, I think we should bear in mind that women are not a homogenous group. So you have women located in different places. So maybe if we look at the agriculture board, we can say this is a campaign that we'd want to engage rural women in and women in peri-urban areas because we want to turn that board around. But I think a more powerful way as well is to say to governments, normally your agricultural board is a public sector board. It's one that is controlled by government. And we've seen greater diversity in such instances than when it comes to private sector boards. But I think you've thrown out an interesting idea, but I'd still say that for a start, it's the quotas. And if the quotas doesn't work, then we need to look at what other power do we have and where we can best impact on people. I would be quite sure that SAB Miller would not want to lose their consumer base if we'd withhold things, but then we'd need to look at what's the replacement for a period if that's the approach to take.
Yes, I look at consumer power as an interesting angle because I often think that people don't realize how much power exactly that they have, and if they do unite with a specific cause, that there is a way of being able to make change happen.
We've got history in South Africa of that, and I think the issue is how do you use it in a way that's not only around a strike for higher salaries, but saying that we'd want to impact on societal change in a positive way, in a constructive way, and there are different avenues to use.
And I think that's another thing that we have to adopt a much longer term vision to doing things. And another point that you had raised is about the inclusivity, but also sustainability.
Absolutely.
And the only way we can be sustainable is about having that long term vision.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, another section of the report dealt with government, and in that it highlighted that although most African countries have got constitutional guarantees for gender equality, we also spoke about South Africa in that instance, that still the state of gender equality in Africa has not yet fully realized women's equal rights in the most basic areas. And again, I'm raising an example of South Africa. I think that as a country, it's reached great achievements, particularly in Parliament, where we have 41% representation. But yet gender equality is not spreading from the government sector into the private sector. And already you'd mentioned that this goes across different countries and continents. Europe, 18%. Mm-hmm. US, 16.9%. Africa, across the survey that you've done, at only 12.7%. What do you think about this, and do you think that we've got any models that we could introduce where we start to see the type of representation that we have in government cascading into the corporate sector?
Yeah, I think two things. As you say, the report reflects on this and actually talks about commissions being set up to look at gender equality and increasing the numbers on boards. And we've seen this happen in the instances of UK and France. We had Lord Mervyn Davis, a former Minister of Trade, that was tasked by the British government to produce a report, and this resulted in setting a target of 25% for women directors in listed companies. So as you talk about listed companies, this will impact on public as well as the private sector, so it can be done. In France, we had a report on the status of women in the workplace, and they looked at the enactment of a quota of 40% of women on boards, which was the minimum quota, really. You also see capital markets authorities, securities and exchanges commissions playing a role in this way. Now, I think what we need to do is really make it very clear what the business case is for women on boards and how the private sector will also benefit from that, because the responsibility of creating a level playing field, as the report says, doesn't only lie on the shoulders, if I can use the shoulders in a metaphorical way, of the public sector, but also the private sector. And we've got to look at how we bring them together. So that's where corporate governance codes come into play. You know, that outlines good corporate practice for boards. And that's available. And this is also for board nominations, so that there's more transparent processes to take that forward. Too many of the current appointments of people to boards, private sector boards, have been the guys playing golf together. And women don't always have the time to go to the 14 holes. I mean, those who can do it, bravo to them. But I think we also bear in mind that women play multiple roles, you know, and there's unpaid work that comes into play. And again, we spoke about Sheryl Sandberg earlier. She wrote about this in Lean In as well. So we need to look at that. But the second issue is that corporate governance rules can and codes could also outline age or tenure requirements, so age limit and so on, so that boards can refresh themselves. And this will open board seats. I mean, earlier we spoke about inclusion being about growing the pie, but when you have a private sector company and board, you know, you're talking about something that's just that and size.
And yeah. Often when I look at that, particularly when we were speaking a little bit about the networks,
yes,
and the longevity and sort of the fresh blood coming in, that many of these people occupy multiple positions across boards. So again, that network is almost shrinking. And we need to look at options of being able to expand it.
I think so, because you also don't want to have a situation that you have aging boards and there's a lack of continuity afterwards. How do we refresh this?
Continuity and the same type of thinking that is being applied.
Yeah.
It doesn't add to innovation.
And also some fresh thinking in instances. I think that's also what we want to look at.
And going back to our main topic, I know that it's virtually impossible to even touch on this report in a 45-minute discussion. But in closing, could you just share with us what the report has achieved so far, and more importantly, what you want it to accomplish?
Yeah. You know, the report has started a discussion on this issue. And the one interesting thing was when it was launched, it was launched at WEF Africa in June in Cape Town. We then had a subsequent launch in Johannesburg as well. We had a launch in Kenya, Nairobi. We also had various radio interviews, the media and all that's gone out quite extensively on this. But companies have come back to us and said, oh, no, those figures are dated. We're actually doing better than you've indicated at this point. Now, for me, that's been very good, because the report clearly states that the data used is data as at December 2013. But the fact that companies are coming and say, hey, hold it, you know, it's not East African breweries that are leading in Kenya. It's actually Barclays that's leading. It means people are listening to it. There's a discussion. But I'd like to get the outliers on both ends to come together. So, for example, Côte d'Ivoire is the worst performing out of the 12 countries out of the 307 companies and all. So I'd like to see a situation that we have a launch in Côte d'Ivoire at the Securities Exchange, and we bring those who have been better performing, so bringing the companies together and say, how do we do better? Governments to do a rethink on quotas, because the report also has an annex that shows the countries that are performing better and why they're performing better, and reflects on the countries with quotas for public listed companies. And not unsurprisingly, Norway leads, with Germany actually being the lowest in 2014 out of the top 10. Top 10 countries with quotas for state-owned companies in 2013 was Israel leading, with Greece being the outlier on that. Municipal and provincial quotas, we had Berlin in Germany, Nuremberg and Germany, and Quebec, Canada, leading. And then proposed quotas are the European Commission, Brazil, Canada, Switzerland, and so on. So that gives the quota legislative strategy for women directors. I just gave you a touch of a global overview. And it's to have a discussion where countries actually say, but we need to do better. Last thing is, we also saw that countries with board diversity language in corporate governance code or stock exchange listing requirements, they do better.
And lastly, can the report be accessed online if people
want to? Yes, it is online. People can access it on the African Development Bank site. Also, if you go into my Twitter handle, at GJFRAS, you'd be able to find it on Twitter as well. It's available. So,
well, we will definitely post a link to it on at the end of this particular program. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time, but I would really like to thank you for joining us. So we have today been talking to Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moliketi from the African Development Bank Special Envoy on Gender for her great contribution towards gender equality in Africa. Thank you very much for your time.
And thanks for your time, and thanks for making good on one of the recommendations that says the media has a role to play.
It's a pleasure. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, and we have been talking to Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moliketi, African Development Bank Special Envoy on Gender.